Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining our show. My name is Wanda McKinley, and with my co-host, Stephanie Kennedy Alford. We are glad that you were able to join our show today. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to actually help men, women, and children to provide them with a stable environment for abused and battered individuals. We want to be able to provide them with temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to be able to help men, women, and children transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient men and women in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower women and to show them how to be self-sufficient once again. We also want to show them, be it men and women, that they can survive and thrive in society on their own, and to uplift them and provide them with a new life, a new perspective of what a normal life should be by enhancing and uplifting them and showing them, just elevating their lives. I am a survivor of domestic violence. My biological father, as well as my stepfather, raped me from the age of 7 to 18. My ex-husband was also very abusive and was very sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive. And I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help women and children who and men who have walked and may be walking in my shoes. Thank you again for joining our show today. Today we have a guest speaker, and I'm really excited about her. Name is Shannon Sanchez. And I'm looking forward to actually introducing her and having her tell us about things that God has brought her through in life, things that she's experienced, what he has her doing now. And before we get into that, hello, Stephanie, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good, honey. Today's been crazy, rushing, trying to get in here. And before we get Shannon on the phone and get to talking to her, can you tell us how your day has gone and tell us about some fundraising events?
Well, this has been a very interesting day. I do want to, and I know this is not normally how our show goes, but I do want to share that I lost one of my friends on Friday, and we will be doing his homegoing on Saturday. Wake will be tonight, so I do want to just kind of give a shout-out and say that we do miss and we love our good friend, Dedrick Lavelle McCray. He will truly be missed. He had a heart attack. So, you know, if you're one that have issues or anything, please get in to see the doctor. I know I will be going in to see the doctor. I am past due on going to see my cardiologist, so I will be going in. So I just wanted to share, if y'all have things going in, don't wait. You know, just go in and see the doctor. We currently have several fundraisers that We Are Survivors would love to have your support in. We currently do the Kroger Plus fundraiser. Kroger Plus Reward, if you currently have a Kroger Plus Rewards card, or if you'll get a Kroger Plus Rewards card if you link it to We Are Survivors by going to Kroger.com, registering your card, and then type in We Are Survivors and link it each quarter according to what you spend. They will send us a donation. We also do the Tum Thumb Rewards. If you go to TumThumb.com and print out their form and link it to We Are Survivors, they will do the same thing. We also do the CPN discount card, which is only $15 a year, and you get discounts all over the U.S., and we get half of that donated to us. And we do the Compass Bank rewards, where if you have a Compass Bank account or you open a Compass Bank account and you link it to We Are Survivors, according to what you spend, they will send us a donation as well. So if you're interested in any of those, you can either call or text me at 817-320-2571, and I'd love to help you get started with any and all of those. And Wanda, I'm going to let you share about the photographer that also does it.
Well, thank you. And as I stated a few minutes ago when we spoke, my prayers are with you, and also condolences to the family. Our big fundraising event is actually called the Purple City Project, and it is a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign where you can book a personal or professional shoot with the photographer who is, his name is Charles, but he goes by City. And what the Purple City Project is, it's actually to raise funds so that We Are Survivors would be able to provide hotel rooms for men, women, and children who are in need of beds when they are no beds within the shelters. And a lot of people really don't understand that there is a very high need for beds, because domestic violence is really an epidemic that for many years was really trying to be swept under the rug. But now it's actually more out in the community and people are talking about it more. He has several different packages. I'll talk about the top two. And one, for example, is the $55 package, which is a $100 value. There's a 20-minute session up to four people, and you get unlimited shots, which is one look. For ladies, it's one outfit and two edits, which means you get to pick two of your favorite pictures. Then you have your $80 package, which is valued at $160, and you get a 45-minute session up to four people, and you have unlimited shots, two looks, which means, ladies, hey, we get to change outfits twice. And four edits, where you're allowed to actually pick four of your top pictures. And as I explained, that's a little, it's harder than it really sounds, because when I did my photo shoot, it took 303 pictures. And honestly, and that was in November, and I'm being honest, I'm still trying to narrow it down, and here it is March. So it's a task. Before we get into other events and things that We Are Survivors have been invited to, that we are a part of, the list seems to be growing really fast this year. We're really excited for the acknowledgement, and are looking forward to helping more in the community and getting the word out to let people know that we are here, we do exist, and that we want to be able to help men, women, and children in situations that is really unfair to them, and we want to have a safe haven for them to go. Now, I'm really excited to bring on Ms. Shannon Sanchez. How are you doing today?
I'm blessed. How are you?
I am great. And now that I've calmed down, because normally I'm prepared, I'm ready to go, I have normally called you, but today traffic had me, like, in gridlock. So I'm like, okay, I called Stephanie, I was like, okay, Stephanie, you might have to start the show. And she's like, okay, is it okay, because I'm about to be traveling? And I was just like, so I do apologize, because normally I call you versus you having to call in, but I'm glad you called in.
That's okay. Well, can we start out with prayer before I speak?
Yes, please.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much that we can come together in your name, we can come together in unity, Father. Each woman here and man, whoever's on the phone, Father, I ask that you give us the right words when to speak, when not to speak, Father, and that we have encouragement for one another to build each other up, that the networking never stops, you know. There's a lot of people who say social media is a waste, Father, but no, it's a way for us as Christians to network and grow, Father, within the community, but stretch out a little further than just our hometown, Father, to show that we are here. Yes, we are survivors, Father God, but you are the one Almighty that has a covering over us as believers in you, Father. I ask that you bless everybody on this line, Father God, that has a ministry in their towns and their cities, Father, that, yes, you know, we have so much that we have to do, Father, but it's all on your timing. I thank you for the time we spend today, Father. I rebuke any type of negativity. Anybody would try to use our words against us, Father. That is not what this phone line is for, Father. That is not what this ministry is for, Father. It is a way to build up each other and build unity. You say in your word, Father, beauty is fleeting, charm is deceptive, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised, Father. And every day we constantly seek you and we grow closer to you. Father, continue to open doors for each and every one of us. And build bonds, Father. That's all we want more, is to be an example of you, Father, but to give a testimony to show that we have been through a lot. And because of you, Father, the perseverance just shows that this is where we are today. In Jesus' mighty name, amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
So, Shannon, tell us about you. I love girl talk. And on, you know, on this show, we talk to the abuser to the survivor, to a counselor, to people that have been, they've experienced because they've lost a loved one to domestic violence. They're now in the trenches trying to get justice for their loved one. We've had people on here that was killed by the hands of their significant other, and it's been 2 or 3 years, 4 or 5 years since it has happened. We've had some powerful shows, and I'm really excited about you. We do follow each other on Facebook. And I read some of your posts. I just want our listening audience to know about you. So, you know, tell us where you come from. You're not here in Texas, are you?
I'm not. And the reason why I found all of you is through social media, because I was raised in a family where you don't talk about your problems, you suck it up, and you do what you can to get by. And so I've always been somebody that has tried to get through it on my own, but there's times where, you know, through the years, I think some people I've known have been in a little denial. So for me in healing, just to escape every day, and, you know, even though I have a busy life out here, to relate to people that have been through it. Because, you know, you always have those, I call them Job comforters, you know. They want to give you all this advice. They want to tell you so much, you know, and it's like, they have never been through it, and they don't realize they're actually hurting you or they're discouraging you. And it's like you don't want to talk about it. So it's like, no, you don't know, you know, what I've been through to get from that to this. And
right.
Yes, we got to have counseling. And, yes, we got to have some have to be medicated. Some have PTSD. Some have, you know, scars and things that they've been through. But some of us, we know how to remain strong. And so you can't label all of us as the same. And, yes, some of us are still healing. So that is me. I am still healing, you know, where I'm at now. It's sad because, you know, we talk about that it's just within families. But I've gone through a situation just recently where I was victimized at my job because my boss knew I came from a background of abuse and he kind of used that against me. So that's right now what I'm healing from. Yeah, it's interesting. But he's a very charismatic type of personality. He's a young man. But, you know, the nice thing about me is because I am an ordained minister that I've stayed connected within the community of pastors because that's just the way I've been from day one when I got saved as an adult. So that is what's kept me in survival mode. But I'm in a different town of about 3 hours away from where my abuser is. And, yes, I heard someone, I think it was Stephanie who was speaking. When I called you all on the line, somebody said they were a survivor also of childhood abuse. And that was me as well. I had a very dysfunctional family. And my grandmother was a survivor of domestic violence. I have an aunt who's a survivor of domestic violence. A lot of that runs in the family. But I am one of those ones, you know, when it happened to me, I really thought I was getting this fairy tale, you know. And, you know, it happened when I met him, I was 19 years old. And so, you know, at that age, you think you're smart, you know it all, you've been, you know, experienced a lot. I realized I was a kid, you know, and I always thought I'll never end up like them. You fight so hard not to end up with what's wrong in your family. But you don't know it. You have blinders on because, you know, he came in a vulnerable state in my life where I was really on top of things career-wise, college-wise. But he was the one that said all the right things of a part where I did lack love and encouragement because I was always growing up doing that for myself. But in the midst of that, being married to him, I got married young. I found the Lord, and in the midst, I grew in the Lord. So that's what kept me going through all these years. You know, I am in my late 30s, so it's been quite the journey. What would you ladies like me to share with you other than what I've shared?
Well,
you want to know where? Go ahead.
It's really for. We kind of have like an open form type thing, so depends on your level of comfortness. If you are comfortable in going into details of what you experienced, things that occurred in your abusive situations. You know, how you were feeling to the point of when you decided enough was enough. How did you leave your situation?
Okay,
and also anything that you feel that you can share with somebody else that may be going through it to keep them or, you know, get them to come out of it or keep somebody from going through it.
But with my circumstances, my abuser, it's, you know, if anybody is familiar with the domestic violence will, I think I've experienced almost everything on that will. But the problem that I had in my marriage is that both sides weren't receiving of it. He was also abused as a child. So that kind of played a role in victimization for me. I didn't realize it at the time. I was always feeling sorry for him and allowing him to do things thinking he'd always get better. That was the young me. But I think, you know, in the time in my life when I realized, okay, this is an abuser, I don't know what to do, I don't know who to reach out to, because I fought to stay married to him because so many people were against us. And sad because through the years, we were married for almost, we were together almost 15 years. But also his family were all very abusive. He had an abusive sister. His mother kind of went through abuse. So it was on both sides. But it was hard because I think when you're in a relationship like that and they allow the family to abuse you, he began to allow the church that the family's close ties to begin to use some emotional abuse as well. And that all happened, I think, when I had gotten hospitalized 1 year. And that's when my eyes really opened. Now, let me tell you, I was in the ministry. A lot of people didn't know because, like I said, when you start to serve in the ministry, you know, I just had one child at the time. You know, the odds are, because we're women, you know, people are just starting to warm up to female ministers. You know, mm-hmm. we're supposed to be strong. We get compared to those in the ministry. They want to see how tough we are. We got to have tough skin, you know. And so I was starting to lead in a church, and it was a praise and worship heart. And there were many, many of people who were interested in the ministry. Some people had an idea of his family's background, but because I was raised to keep your mouth shut and just, you know, move mm-hmm. on with life, a lot of people didn't know. But I had gotten yep. sick. I was only 27 years old, and I ended up with spinal meningitis, encephalitis, and West Nile virus.
Wow.
Now, at the time when I had got hospitalized, I had already, we had already been kind of beaten down by his family. We had already, he was a little bit of jealousy was sinking in because I was starting to serve in the ministry. The child being born, you know, it was kind of everybody adjusting to us, serving in church. There was a tug of war already because they didn't like the denomination we were in. So little things were adding up with that. So it was getting hard on him. And he was kind of, you know, the same thing, just bickering about little things with me because it was a threat. It's almost like in the marriage there was a competition because I was moving up and he wasn't going anywhere because his family has had a dream for him since he was 5 years old to be a minister. So there's a lot of pressure. So when uh-huh. I was in the hospital, all this was against us. And I'll never forget because I'd already been in the hospital a month. They said that I was so – they thought I was going to die because they said I had so much heat coming off my head that about – 6 inches away, they could put their hand and they could feel the heat coming off. I couldn't see.
Wow.
They were already on their third spinal tap. But at the time, a lot of people don't know, when I woke up, I felt so betrayed because the people in his family, it was like all the enemies were in my hospital room. People that have been abusive towards me that his family loved or somebody he was encouraged by were in there. And I thought, in my heart, you know, they thought I was going to die. But another part, you know, I thought, what is it? This is a nightmare. You know, I had family calling saying, you know, just give up and die, you know.
Wow.
And the one minister that he had sent in was the one that was really trying to ruin my reputation. A lot of things were happening. But there was one part where they had asked if the pastor wanted to bring lunch. And I'll never forget because I told them, well, yeah, he can if he wants, kind of like a show. And mm-hmm. the very next day, I had called my ex, and I said, well, the pastor never showed. And they told him what he was supposed to bring. And no phone calls, nothing had happened. All of a sudden, he came in, and he kind of threw the sandwich at me as an inconvenience because nobody was there, just he and I alone. And it's the same type of behavior because it's like, I think they were expecting me to die. And that was the first time
wow.
of the betrayal. And so I was in my hospital bed. My ex stopped showing up. All I had was the nurses and the doctors in the hospital. And that's the part where, you know, I knew God was all I had in the hospital room. And, you know, it's hard when you're fighting for your life. The last thing you want is doubt or negativity or anything spoken over you when you're fighting over your life. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't know. I couldn't see. And I'll never forget one night I was watching TV, and I remember there was a certain song I'd heard on TV, and it was built around a little tiny church. And I thought, you know what? I can't handle this. I got to get out. I don't know if I could really walk. I can't see. I'm in pain. They can't figure out what's going on. And so that's a part where I thought enough was enough. I had gotten up. In the middle of the night, I walked down to the little church inside there. And I said, I just need to get away from all the negativity and the sickness. And when I sat in the church, I got there and I said, Lord, you know, if this is all, if we believe that everything in this tiny little book, and we believe that God is a miracle-working God, and things still happen, mm-hmm. and I can raise my son, I've had enough of everybody mistreating me, telling me to die in this hospital. I just got a sandwich thrown out of me by a minister that everybody thinks, you know, never does wrong. And I've had enough from my ex. You know, there was enough. It's like, it was a nightmare. And so if I could just get out of here, I could raise my son and I can do better, help bring my eyesight back. I'd went up back to my room and I could barely see. I mean, things were on top of each other. sick.
Wow.
I mean, it was like I was cross-eyed. My brain was swelling so bad it was cutting off the optic nerve. So when I went upstairs, I think it was about a few weeks later, they said, we're going to release you. We don't know what happened to you. I rejected another spinal tap. They were going on a fourth one. And I still didn't have my eyesight back, but they released me. When I got home, a lot of people didn't know I was alone a lot. And my son, he was almost, I think he was 3 months old, if not older. We were in the car together, and my ex had took me home. A lot of people don't know, because of the abuse, he was working with a family. He just left us at home, and I was with my son, like, here, you can take over now. I was still blind. I couldn't see. And here I had a child to take care of, and it was like that isolation of being left alone. And so that was the mental part of the mental abuse starting to kick in. I had nobody to help me. I was there alone. The same time, I couldn't go to my family because it was like, you made your bed, lie in it. You have to stay with him. So it was already, you know, it was already dysfunctional as it was. It wasn't accepted for the marriage. So I had my little boy there. You know, I couldn't see. Trying to get around. They asked that I put a patch over one of my eyes that was causing it worse to see. I remember the same thing, just going to prayer, asking God, you know, I want to raise my child. You see what's going on. The same thing in denial, thinking I'll get better, I'll get better. And when I was with my son, about a week later, I went into a doctor that was doing an examination, and he was studying diseases, and the same thing, they couldn't figure out how I had gotten better. The Lord had completely healed me. They wanted to do more weird testing, but I said, no, I rejected it. But from that time, the emotional abuse, I had a year later lost my child, the same thing, the denial.
Wow.
I miscarried, and same time about our house had burnt down, and I'll never forget the same thing where it was like little by little the emotional abuse, but when I had lost my child, I didn't understand about it. I was working in a dental office, and I went home. And we didn't have insurance at the time, but I remember being scared because of that. How am I going to raise this kid? We don't have insurance yet. Where am I going to have this child at? And this is another thing where it kicked in. This wasn't, it was more of the emotional, because when I went into the hospital, the same thing again, they had said, you know, don't just go home. Don't do anything. We can't find it. They thought it was an ectopic pregnancy. They weren't sure. But they knew the baby had already died. But they said, we just need to let you pass it. And they sent me home, and I was in the restroom. And I had lost the baby in a restroom, in the restroom. And I remember getting in the tub. And it was so traumatizing because I'd never been through anything like that before. And the same thing, my ex, this is another time where I just opened my eyes. He was screaming at me. He said, you didn't want it anyway. It's your fault, you know, and it's just, the yelling and the screaming, and I'm in shock. I'm in a tub filled of where the tub was covered in blood. You're just, it's the same thing. I'm a fighter having to get through that, but him screaming over me, you know, my parents, my father was there. Yes, he was abusive, but I'd gotten a hug from him, but it, like the same thing, it wasn't consoling. It just felt like betrayal because I, same thing, all the enemies there. But, a lot of little things that happened like that, a lot of the screaming, it became through the years where I knew there were affairs. You know, there were times where, you know, I knew he was going on. I had that feeling in my heart. There was one night I spent New Year's alone, and I remember I just so tired and worn out. And I was watching a movie, and I remember I had asked him to come home, and that he started to drink again. A lot of the church members didn't know. I'll never forget one day he threw a bucket of laundry at me and he said, get to work, you know. And so little things like that were happening. He would lose his temper. If he lost the wallet, he'd, you know, beat up the entire house, punch holes, do all kinds of things. You know, he was losing his mind. You know, at the same time, he'd make you feel bad that his family was treating him bad. My children, you know, the same thing with them. I began to homeschool them. He said, my son, he is a high-functioning autistic. And so he was kind of being bullied at school. So at the time, it was a perfect chance for him to keep me isolated, to raise the children at home. I wouldn't leave the house unless it was for church or some kind of ministry thing, but even the same thing, the family had a hard time with it. There were times when, you know, I would, the family knew what was going on, but I'd get invited less and less to holidays. If I behaved or did something out of line, I would get yelled at home for it, almost getting treated like a child. But I think when the worst had happened, I mean, when it got bad, I had nowhere to go. No one had told me about a crisis center. You know, I wouldn't have had a clue where to go. I would reach out to people at church, a few, but all they would say was, we'll pray for you. And I think that was hard. That's when I realized all you have is God, because some people can't grasp it. They're kind of in denial because he to them looks like a calm guy. He's out in the business world where a lot of people already know him, but I'm at home. A lot of people don't know me. I'm isolated. But there's one year, I think, when it finally got bad, it was in 2012, I had a feeling he was having an affair, but it was like there was like all in one year where he was starting to beat more things up in the house, bust things. He'd scream at the kids on how they weren't the favorite in the family, a lot of emotional abuse towards them. But it came to a point where he had broken another door. And I remember I was crying, please, you've busted every door in this house. I said, could you not do another one? And I was arguing with him. And I remember we were in the room. And I can understand, you know, you had to have been there. But all the emotional abuse, all the broken doors, you know, being slammed in the wall a few times, you know, being left alone a few times, you know, he would mess with the money, leave us there with just me and the children. Sometimes I'd have to figure out how to get creative to feed them, and sometimes I wouldn't eat. You know, there were times where he was suicidal. I saved his life from hanging himself, you know, and it was hard because I wanted out, but I didn't have anybody, and I didn't know how to get me and the children to safety. And there was one year, and like I said, he was breaking everything in the house, and I remember I was crying, and I said, please stop busting everything. I just had enough. And we'd gotten a fight, and that's when he had actually, I can't remember, but he ended up on top of me, and he put his knees on my shoulders, and he was choking me. And I remember him saying, I wish you would die. I just wish you would die. He'd grab my hands, and he'd use my own hands to slap my face, and then he was choking me. And I remember at that point, you know, I kind of wish I would. And it went by so fast, but it felt like an hour of him just doing that. The same time I was looking at him, I love you. I mean, so much goes in your mind at that moment, because I was looking at him thinking, I loved you all these years, all the starving, all the hard work in ministry, everything, trying to be the perfect little wife, and you're choking me. And I'm looking in your blue eyes, And I kind of wish I would die. I'm tired. But my kids, I got to live for my kids. There's people out there in church who already know that I speak. I minister to people out there. They need me. There's kids that need me. I take care of the neighborhood kids. I got to live for them. At the same time, you're thinking all that so fast. But I think, I don't know what killed me worse, is the choking or if him saying, I wish you would die. I wish you would die. And this is somebody who is supposed to be your covering or something, you know, right. It says, you know, God says, you know, you're supposed to be submissive. All the scriptures we know they teach you in church, be submissive, you know, love your husband, you know, it's better to be in a house with a nagging wife, you know, than to be with the Lord. You know, all the scriptures, I knew all that. I was strong in the Lord. At the same time, I'm thinking all this. And I remember he got up and he left, and I remember just laying there in bed. I felt so betrayed. I couldn't go to my family. I had told my father once he was already abusing me, and when I did, my father told him or talked to him or something, but it got worse. But I remember in that moment of choking me, I thought, I didn't die. Maybe he didn't choke hard enough. I don't know. I got to get out of this. Who do I go to? I don't know. I'm now isolated. I've told people in church, they just pray for me. What do I do to get out of this? My kids, I was now with them, and I know they think, you know, their dad thinks the world of their father. At the same time, he did emotional abuse, but they didn't understand it too little. But I remember that moment, I thought, I've got to get out of this. I remember calling lawyers. I looked up because, like I said, I was a stay-at-home mom. I called pro bono lawyers at the time so he would know and ask them, do you know any shelters? Do you know anything? How to get out of this? And I was letting them know. And they said, we'll call you back. They never called me back.
Wow.
And so I had no help. And I was afraid because a lot of people were kind of in denial because he looks like a nice guy. So it may have been reported back. It may have gotten back. It may have slipped out. We eventually did divorce. But at the same time, I was trying to find out a way how to get out, to do it smooth, stay calm, keep the kids with me. I was trying to go out of town to see my grandmother so I could talk to her to see if she could come up with ways to help us. But even I didn't have a whole lot of money, and I remember he wouldn't really give us any to visit her. My hometown was our safe haven. You know, I had an aunt, you know, same thing. She was like, oh, we'll talk to some people in town. They'll help you. But really, it was a sick, twisted joke because she's kind of one of my abusers as well. But eventually, he had filed for divorce. But at the same time, I had to go. I did find out of a crisis center at the time, and I filed a PFA because I knew something was coming because I didn't know how to do it. And mm-hmm. when I filed the PFA, at the same time, he had found a lawyer, very, very good lawyer, one of the top lawyers in town. His family had helped pay for it. I had finally found a lawyer through a crisis center at the same time, and I had to write down everything to let them know what had happened. And when we went to court, it was around time of Thanksgiving. You can understand, I was always at home with my children. When I showed up at court, I think that's what really woke up my eyes, that I am not dealing with somebody that I thought I knew all these years. I'm dealing with a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I showed up in court. Uh-huh. I didn't yet have representation. I had advocates there, and he was there, and he had his lawyer. But his lawyer was trying to kick out the advocates. But this is what got me, is he never wanted to be with his family. He always wanted us with him. But what he did is he used my family's dysfunctional background to his family's stability, but it's his extended family. And it was enough for him to get temporary an emergency custody, so they got it figured out. And I had to represent myself. My lawyer wasn't there. And so he made me look like a wreck, and he used his family.
Wow.
The judge actually wouldn't even make eye contact with me. He gave holidays over to my ex, and that was enough for my ex to get that lawyer. It was the top one in their town, enough to do the dirty work. What he did was, through the years, and that was in 2012, he would then begin to abuse the system. My lawyer, I gave all the information I could, but he knows friends that are also involved. They have a history of drug abuse. They've had drug busts in their house. This is before we were married. He would begin to use certain people in the community to write false statements in court. The day after my mother died, she was the next person we were starting to get along. That was in 2014. She's getting sick. We were starting to discuss things because at the time, the courts had ruled that I could actually have full custody of the children. So I moved about 30 minutes out of town, away from us, in the country town, a place I knew would be peaceful, and they're farm people, so I knew they would be nice to us and be peace for my kids. But the same thing, it's like, it's weird because all the years of that, like I said, there's so much more he's done. But it's like, even though after court was done, everything was ruled, the divorce decree was instated, you know, we had the rules set. It's like it wasn't enough. Because once I was there, and he waited until after my mother died, the day after, and she was only 55. That was the only source I had at the time to kind of let her know what he was doing. He had actually gotten our house, and he was letting different people inside and out of it. I had heard he'd little things my mother was reporting back. He let a little girl or a woman beat my daughter. I guess she was a meth addict.
Wow.
And I did all I could to report into my lawyer, but he had a better lawyer and more money and better representation. And I noticed they're not really in favor if I'm not the breadwinner of the family because I was a stay-at-home mother. So when my mother died, the day after she had died, he took me back to court, but I was trapped in snow. I had to talk to the county clerks to report in and ask, are you recording my voice? And they said, yes. So I let them know what he was doing. And I'd give text after text to show the emotional abuse, to show different things of stalking and different kinds of things, and it seemed like it never mattered. But how he really won with the courts the day after my mom died is he said that I had beaten up a lot of people. He used people that, like I said, are close with him. He, even in my mother's hospital room, he had said I assaulted a bunch of people, but I wasn't able to be present in court because I was trapped in snow in my country town. So that was enough to give them temporary custody, full custody of the children. And it was always enough for him to keep me away from my mother's funeral. And so a week later, I show up and thank God for the judge because he goes, you don't look capable of doing all this. He says, we need you to disprove all of it. And that's exactly what I did. I'm a very detailed person. So I had to fill out all the information that he had did and all the people, the testimonies he did and the people he used against me to give them a background so they could see who they were. And I said, you know, you want to talk about character. So each person he used, I gave a background of the criminal history they had had. Everybody that was in the hospital when my mother died had wrote in and said, I didn't do any of that. But it's like he, you know, he undermined the system. He cheated them. And it was enough for him to get the kids from me. So when I wasn't present, they had ordered for me to get a mental evaluation, all kinds of crazy things.
Wow.
And I felt humiliated because they don't know what I had been through with him. They didn't realize I was already working for a school. I was also a sub throughout the community for nurseries. I work with special needs children. They didn't know I was a minister. They didn't know anything because I could not speak in court. And so he had did all that in 2014. And so, and the little by little, it's like I almost got lost in the system. But that's when I realized how dangerous it was because I was naive. Because, you know, you believe, you know, I've shared once, you know, in God we trust. The judge, the police, they're all supposed to protect you. You know, you believe there's justice in the system. And you know what? It's not their fault. They just fell for somebody who was a good con artist. And so, you know, and even after all that, I mean, he was still, he was stalking one of my best friends. She had to take him to court. She actually won the case and got a restraining order. She lived my nightmare for a little bit, and she'd lost a lot of weight because she couldn't get over it. So that was kind of a blessing in disguise. She was also from a farm town. She got to see a little bit of it. But a lot of people don't know that, you know, he abused the system. So now, today, he has my kids, but I get visits with them. And you got to remember, they made me look like the maniac. And so I do see my children. I see them every other weekend. But you know what? There is a blessing in that because from all that was done to me in court, they made me look like a lunatic. They made me look like I was a criminal. I've never broken the law before in my life. And it was enough for me. They took everything from me. So for him to get away from him, I did get my wish. I actually moved to my hometown. And when I moved to my hometown, it's like I had to flee so I couldn't be stalked anymore. And so I'm here in my hometown safe, but I have to drive to see my children. At the same time, yes, it's insulting that I had to get a mental exam, but as a blessing in disguise, because you can't abuse that to say I'm a maniac, because the therapists that I have been a blessing because they say I have PTSD, where he's trying to make me look like I need to be locked up in a mental institution, you know, but they did all that before they knew my background. So, you know, there's so much more I could tell you, but yeah, he abused the system. So my children, you know, I'm a minister. I'm the one that raised them in the Lord. They don't go to church anymore. You can see a change. They cry for me. And, you know, now that I'm home, I do what I can when I see them to be positive, and I teach them the ways because I've gotten smart because of that. I let them know good touches, bad touches, who they can talk to in the school system. I let them know everything, you know, so they know who to talk to. Even though, you know, even growing up as a kid, I did have some people that were bullying me in school. You know, I had some people said a lot of things against, but I didn't want my children to know that because I want them to believe they can confide in the schools, that the counselors are good. I want them to be able to trust a police officer. You know, there's so many things I wanted them to know so they'll be smart until, you know, the Lord intervenes and finds a way for me to fight for my case. But while I'm here healing in my hometown, you know, a lot of people don't know, because I don't like to be sad. I don't like to be depressed. I fight all the time. I don't want to, because I was always a happy person. And so I began to do things here in the community, just serving, you know, anywhere I could just to reach out to somebody. You know, sometimes if I get pain, I'd go, you know, feed a homeless person, go hang out with them, you know, just to let them minister to me. They didn't know they were a blessing to me. I take care of my grandmother with cancer and a disabled uncle. And so they've been my joy because I get to take care of them. So it's like wherever I feel, I never felt the Lord has failed me, but I felt people have failed or he has abused them. I have found ways to give back to the community. At my job, the same thing. A lot of them, I try not to tell people I'm a minister, but all that pain, I've gotten to know people that were residents, you know, there, and it was a nursing facility. But the same thing, all that pain, I learned how to put it as a positive to everybody in the community. And when they find out you're a minister, it's amazing they trust you. And so there were certain people I ministered to. There's been funerals I've done here, and the families have opened up. A lot of people, you know, have been really comforting, you know, any way I can. Even with the police department here, I did a lot of baked goods for them because there was a few times they really did make me feel safe. You know, everything I felt like he had robbed me of, you know, I tried to put that back into my city, back into my town, because that shows that, you know what, even though they did that in the courthouse, you know, in God's community, in God's judgment, you know what, I'm giving back. So I'm showing that they didn't rob me. They didn't steal me of the one thing that is my life. That is my joy. You know, and I don't like to share that story around here because I don't want pity. Yeah, it was hard. Yeah, I could have died. Yeah, he left me to die a couple of times. There's so much more. But you know what? It's like the one thing where I have revenge is that I'm educated. I'm alive. I'm the one that's ordained. You know, I'm the one that serves God. You know, I remain steadfast. I never gave up. I don't blame God. You know, and same thing, the way I've met all of you, the same thing I've met people throughout the community. You know, I work with women with domestic violence. There's a way you can relate. You know, children in the community, you know, it's funny, I saw it was World Book Day, but the children here in the community, I worked in the school district, the same thing, they go through that at home. You know, I thought if the one thing I could do, God, just give me an opportunity because I don't want them to go through what I went through as a child. If I can just intervene and plant one seed in that child, maybe he's hungry. Yes, I starved. Is he scared because of a broken home? He's scared because dad's in a gang. God, give me something to say to that child so they know that maybe that seed is planted now. When they are my age, they will not be in jail. They will not be a repeated generation of what their family was. Maybe they will actually be in church. God, give me an opportunity. If there is a little girl who feels like, you know, she deserves to be beat, you know, if she deserves it to be called ugly or worthless, no, God, let me use this a moment to sow into her, because, you know, you learn, I don't want them to be like me, what I went through, that I thought I had to suffer. I don't want them to believe that their mouth has to be closed and they have to just get through it and suck it up. I want them to believe they have a place to go. All that stuff that I learned, it, you know, it's a learning process through mistakes. And you know what? In your valleys is when you learn who is there for you. And you know what? Sometimes nobody is there but God. And you know, all the sewing and everything I did through the years, all the ministering, all the people in church that I helped, none of them were there to help. I was homeless at one point because of what he did to me in the system. And there was a few people in the community, some were too ashamed to even talk to me because they couldn't believe it. I was kind of dubbed kind of a loser, you know, and it's like, you know, you really learn you have nobody. And if I could just trust in God, if you can believe mm-hmm. He is your lifeline, He will intervene and He will do things that may not be the way you like it. No, I'm not happy what was done to me, but you know what? I am blessed to be here with my family. Mm-hmm. I am with some good women in the community. We take care of other women. I love my police department. I have faith in my court system here because they have taken good care of me. You know, I was raised Catholic. And there's a lot of things behind that as well, too, because they've learned I'm ordained. The priests have been good to me. The pastors here in the community, they all just very good men, even though they don't know I was abused through the years in the churches because of being a strong woman and knowing scriptures. You know, I was a type being mm-hmm. raised and told I would never amount to anything, so I've always been a fighter. But the way they didn't win me over is by me sewing back to everybody. I don't want them to feel like that. We can't protect everybody from pain, but if I can keep them from experiences, so help me God, I will do what I can.
Right.
So, wow. You know, I'm still fighting for that. I've had a few negatives here. Like I said, my boss learned. He used a little bit of those tactics on me. I've had a few people that are in business, my ex, you know, keep tabs on me. He continues to find me every once in a while. I had somebody tell me, you need to move far away. And I was like, I'm tired of moving. I need to stay put. My family needs me, you know. But I do what I can, you know, with serving everybody here. I'm in the process of looking for a job. I'm not going to let that get me down. But, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, I've been through a lot. And that is where God has me now. And no, He has not stopped. He looks for different opportunities to find out a way to undermine me. But I do use the right people to help me to get through this. So that is where I am at right now.
Wow. I think God will take us through what I've learned. And Stephanie also can be a witness to this as well. Your story, because of what you've gone through, your passion to help other people, He chooses His children. We go through things, and people think because we are saved and because we believe in Him that our lives are going to be easy and we're not going to have storms. But the storms that we go through makes us stronger so that we can share, this is what happened to me, but my God brought me through. This is what I've learned from. Now for me, when I hit a rough path or something doesn't settle with me, I always pray and say, okay, God, what is the lesson? What am I supposed to learn? So I know there's a lesson in this. There's a reason why. There's a reason why everything happens. And for me, because of what I've gone through in the past, now I can step back and say, okay, I'm supposed to learn something from this. I'm supposed to get something out of this, and whether it's to help me or to help someone else. Stephanie and I have firsthand been able to, because of us being transparent and sharing our stories of survival, help other people. And it's amazing when someone that is in an abusive situation or even has been reaches out to say, hey, thank you, I heard, because of what you said, this has helped me do this, or I'm going to redirect, or I'm going to change this. Or Stephanie actually got a phone call last week from the show we had last week. Someone was like, hey, I'm ready to do something different. So to hear what you've gone through, even being a minister, even, you know, an ordained minister, you know, people seem to think because a person may be, like I said, an ordained minister or, you know, profess their love for God, that their life is going to be easy. So
because
I really
of the abuse,
do.
Like, Yeah, because of the abuse, even down to somebody that's in the hospital bed, and I know they're about to pass away, I'm still very merciful and very gracious, you know, to those, because they don't understand what it's like to be dying in that bed. You know, any type of negative, any type of evil, we've got to use it for good. No matter if they think me, you know, is a waste of time loving the Lord, if I'm a joke, let me be a joke, but you know what? You will not stop me from serving. If I look like I failed, then look at me like a fail, because you know what? God has never failed me.
And he won't. Wow. How old are your children?
My son is 13 and my daughter is 8. And like I said, I've never opened up with this story to anybody, but because you all have been an encouragement, you're all such beautiful ladies. You know, I've found a few other people online. You guys are all really a big encouragement to me. That's why I think it's funny they laugh at social media. It's like, no, social media is a blessing to me. It's my getaway. You know, it's my place where I could, you know, just if I need to vent on Facebook, you know, if there's somebody there, it's a blessing to me, because, you know, I don't want everybody out there to know when they see me in town what I've been through. I don't want them to pity me. I want them to know that, yes, we're survivors. You know, we've overcome. We're not weaklings. We're not, you know, we're not somebody who can't operate every day in this life. We can.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can. We can and we will. And I do thank you for your kind words, because I know for Stephanie and I, just even when we initially started this and begin to be transparent, and when God showed me this was my calling, it was not something that I openly decided I was going to do. I'm very grateful that he did choose me and Stephanie to be vocal and to let people know that, hey, the things that are happening or have happened to you, it's not your fault, and that you're not alone, because a lot of times we think we're alone. And you're not alone. And there are, like you at the time, you know, didn't have any type of help. But people know that it is people out there that will help you and that want to help and, you know, actually are waiting for that individual to say enough is enough. And I know for a lot of us, it's just different things that trigger that. For you, it was your kids, and for me, it was my child. I have a 23-year-old daughter, and my thought process was, I have to leave because my ex-husband was also abusive. I have to leave him because I don't want her growing up thinking this is how our relationship is supposed to be. I didn't want her to think that it's okay for your husband to stay out all hours of the night. It's okay for him to come home and, you know, punch a hole in the wall or whatever the case may be. I didn't want my daughter to grow up thinking that was okay. So I know for a lot of women and men, there are certain things in life that some of it's their own life that, okay, I'm done with this because I want better for me, or I'm done with this because I want better for my kids. And like always, that hour is gone already. Shannon, I again want to thank you for joining us on our show.
No problem.
That we are linked up on Facebook, and we'll continue to communicate back and forth and to let you know that we are here for you. Stephanie, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No, just thank you so much for sharing everything, and I'm sure that not only this is helping you, but it is helping others that are currently listening and those that will listen in the future. Thank you so much for being obedient and opening up.
You didn't even get half of the story. That's just enough for me actually stepping out and being honest. So, yes, I'm being very transparent. This is my first time. But I love you, ladies.
Thank
you. You're so beautiful.
Love you, too, and thank you. And for everyone, feel free to contact me or Stephanie with any questions or comments and survivor stories. Remember that we are writing now for a magazine that is located in Finland and Nigeria. So we would love to hear survivor stories. And if you ever decide one day to write that down, I would love to publish it. If
you
all have any questions, no, thank you.
Our direct number is 214-454-2933, and our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. I want to thank God for you listening, and I pray today that something on the show was said that will touch your heart. We are here to help, support, to guide, to listen, and to lift you up. In the name of Jesus, we will always worship his holy name. God bless everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.